and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report, where we're gonna do it again. The third day of the Supreme Court hearings, a very serious, dignified process with long history in America, where we do the hard work of evaluating whether someone deserves to have nearly unlimited power for the rest of their life over American society. Or at least that's technically what we're supposed to be doing. But JR, today is a big JR News Wednesday as we enter day three of the Amy Coney Barrett hearings. We're gonna be talking about it. I'm glad that you're here because I can't take much more.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. Good thing that these things are lifetime appointments in the Supreme Court, because that would completely eliminate any and all biases or partisanship. I'm glad we have this situation in place to make sure that does not happen, because it doesn't happen in our Supreme Court.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say this, the idea, before we move into it, and we got things to talk about before we get into the news, the idea of her being one of the nine just makes me feel so much dread. The only thing that makes me feel better is the thought of her being one of the 15. That I think I won't have as big of a problem with. So let's move in that direction. Anyway, so JR, very glad that you're here to cover the news and possibly for something as yet unannounced tomorrow night that we haven't decided if we're doing yet. But if we do, yeah, maybe JR will be involved. Everybody who's already joining us on YouTube or Twitch, thank you so much for being here. Please hit the like button and share the stream so the more people know that we're active and live. They can get involved in the conversation and all of that. And if you send us messages, as so many of you are already doing, wow, we'll be responding to those as we go. I hope that many of you tuned in to the T.Y. Tarantino special last night. It was supposed to be like an alternate history, but it was pretty much just how did TYT start? How did we all get involved, JR? Which I found to be fine. That was like the most fun I've had on a special in a long time. What'd you think?
Yeah, to speculate where we would be is a little bit tough because, you know, what kind of decisions we would have made right after. All we could have given was the immediate thing that would have happened, which I think we did a little bit of. But yeah, and I mean, it's more fun to reminisce. And then this is what happened.
Yeah.
Old pictures started getting filed through. And once you see those, you can't help but start talking about what was going on in those moments.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. We got to see, so I was on an hour with Anna Kasparian. We got to see some old photos of Anna when she was, I think, 12 and working at the studio. It was great. And I think it's probably up on the Twitch channel or somewhere. I don't know. If you're a member, you probably have access to it. I don't know for sure, but you should definitely watch it if you haven't already. The first hour is rough because Cenk, I guess he was broadcasting from like a Russian cell phone from the 1980s. I don't know. It was terrible, but it was still fun. And let's see. Oh, I've been tracking, by the way, Shop TYT, the how much people have been liking the Damage Report t-shirt and the new Dragon Squad t-shirt. And the response has been amazing. If you haven't already seen them, go to Shop TYT. They should be there at the front page. We're just seeing a photo there. I love that design. It makes me so excited. Carlos did such a good job. It's so aggressive. Like, to some extent, thematically not quite right, because the whole point of Dragon Squad was that it was going to be incredibly lame, but still cooler than the Proud Boys or the Boogaloo Boys or whatever. That just looks really cool. I guess we're cool now. What are we supposed to do? Sometimes you find out you're cool. Yeah, just now. And anyway, also we have an Instagram, Instagram.com/TheDamageReport. So go check that out. You should be seeing today some Dragon Squad pets. People have been sending in their photos to hashtag pets of TDR, and we're gonna be spreading those. That said, we've got a lot of news to get to, JR. So why don't we jump into it?
Ready.
It is day three of the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings. But before we get to all of that, I want to just highlight one part of day two that happened after our show yesterday. Here she is being asked about climate change.
Yeah, yeah. What about it?
How about climate change? I mentioned climate change. Have you read about that?
I've read about climate change.
And you have some opinions on climate change that you've thought about?
You know, I'm certainly not a scientist.
I'm not saying you are.
I mean, I've read things about climate change. I would not say that I have firm views on it.
Why would you? I mean, you're only a full grown adult. The science has only been settled for decades, and you will be ruling on any number of cases that are already pending having to do with climate change. Why would we expect that you would have a firm view at all about it? So on possibly the most important challenge currently facing our species, our civilization, our country, she doesn't have firm views about that, really. Or certainly not firm views that we get to hear about.
You started the whole show talking about these confirmation hearings, and I'm really trying to figure out why. I feel like I said it, not during the last ones, but because those were pretty contentious, talking about everything that went down with Kavanaugh. But most of these end up being an exercise, and I don't recall, I can't answer, kind of, not really, but sort of. And we don't get anything from these nominees or these people that have been appointed and they're looking for their confirmation. We just don't get it. And they're not supposed to. Anything they say is gonna get scrutinized from one side or another. So why do they say anything? Why do we have them? Again, I felt like I said this during one of the more recent ones. We're not learning anything. You watched for several hours today, and all you get is the same things that you figured are true about her and that are semi-confirmed, because she won't say yes or no. She'll say kinda, sorta, maybe. Why are we doing this? This is a waste of a whole bunch of time. Just, we know her record. Let the senators, let the Judiciary Committee sift through her records. Mm-hmm. And then we know who she is based off of that. Those are her legal records. Those are things that she's decided on. Those are boards that she sat on. Those are the opinion pieces that she wrote. That's who she is. Not this person who now decides to sit in front of this committee and not tell us anything. You've told us plenty about yourself before that. When you go to a job interview and they look for your resume, there's a reason why they have your resume. They don't just take Joe Schmo off the street and say, hey, come up to the board meeting and talk to us about who you are. No, we already know who you are. We looked into your background. Why are we talking to you so you can lie to us?
Exactly. And about, oh God, Bill McKibben had a great tweet about that particular part. We're about to go way broader than just climate change, but he said, not being an astronomer, I can't really offer an opinion on whether a giant asteroid crashing into the planet would be desirable. That's exactly the same thing. She's saying, I'm not an expert, and I'm gonna pretend that there aren't experts, that nobody knows anything. Maybe the experts are, you know, the CEO of ExxonMobil. I don't know, maybe we'll find out, but you're not gonna find out, not until you give me a lifetime, effectively unrevocable position to rule on whether we get to respond to the climate crisis or we don't. Because we are gonna have, no matter what happens, a big battle ahead of us to get the Green New Deal passed. And when it does get passed, Amy Coney Barrett's gonna be waiting there. So that's gonna be fun. Really quick mention, probably not necessary because we've said this so many times. But she will be, when she gets on the Supreme Court, because they're definitely putting her on the Supreme Court, the third Supreme Court justice that Trump will have gotten. So we just have to look back and say that the whatever, different people are gonna blame different things, I get it. But the path that led to Trump becoming president and having this unprecedented ability to shape the Supreme Court, whoever you blame, that was the biggest disaster, the most consequential disaster in our lives in politics. Maybe the 2000 election launched the Iraq War and all that. Maybe that was worse, maybe. But this is probably worse going forward because of the power that she'll have to strike down progressive legislation for literally the rest of our lives, the rest of my time in media, JR's time in media, and all of that. So that's fun. But I totally agree with your point. She won't tell you about anything that is pending. Legislation wise, any kind of sort of challenge, she won't tell you anything about that. She won't tell you about anything that could come before her.
Yep.
And anything that definitely won't, from her point of view, is settled and I don't need to talk about it. Anything that has been worded so vaguely that it has nothing to do with any particular piece of legislation, if it has to do with anything that we know she has a view on, well, that's settled or whatever. I'm not gonna talk about that. This is just, I'm not going to tell you anything. And the Republicans pretending that they're okay with that, which is a lie twice over. One, because they already know what she actually thinks. That's why they don't need any more information. And two, because you can bet your ass that the next time a Democrat, if we're lucky enough to get a Democrat nominee for the Supreme Court, they're gonna suddenly expect a little bit more information out of the nominee at that point. Don't expect that this, well, we wouldn't want her to predispose herself towards any outcome attitude is gonna last a minute past Amy Coney Barrett getting on the Supreme Court.
Yeah. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, so the entire thing feels like a massive sham. It's a farce. It's offensive. The only reason it's worth any investment is as a reminder to the American people in the literal final weeks of an election 13 million plus people have already voted in, that this is what the Republican Party wants. That's what the Dems need to do, remind the American people. That is literally it. That's it.
Yeah, and you know, and honestly, I'm trying to figure the best way that Biden and Harris can answer this court packing question, because honestly, first off, we can ditch the term because this has been happening consistently from lower courts to other appellate courts throughout the country, to where Republicans have been shifting the power of courts consistently, but there's just not enough Americans pay attention to it. And you know, rightfully so. I mean, how much are you going to be paying attention to certain, you know, I'm going to make up one because I don't pay attention to it enough either. The 13th appellate court in New Hampshire, who knows? I don't know where these things are, what exactly they're ruling on, until something is newsworthy that they're ruling on. But in the meantime, positions and judges get appointed to these positions all the time and people don't pay attention. This isn't the first time Amy Coney Barrett has done anything. You know, there's lots of track record on her, but we didn't hear about her till now, because now it's the Supreme Court. But all these other courts have a very big influence on the way that laws are carried out and the way things are ruled on. And eventually when it gets up to the Supreme Court, the few that do, then we hear about those.
Yeah,
it's honestly something that's been happening with the Republican Party for a while, and Democrats are afraid to say it. Hey, I don't know, maybe you can just say, if you're running for president, you're damn right, we're gonna do something different with these courts, because what more promises do I have to listen to from this party who has absolutely no principles and will say one thing and do the exact opposite without blinking an eye? Why should I be playing this game with them? Why are they controlling me?
I'm so sick of the entire conversation about packing the court or expanding, literally any of it. Ted Cruz said he wasn't gonna give Hillary Clinton a nominee ever. If she became president, Merrick Garland would never come up for a vote ever. So spare me. And you can go through, we're not gonna go through all the research. Take a look at the changes to state Supreme Courts under Republicans over the last decade or two. Take a look at what they really think about how unchangeable and durable these Supreme Courts need to be. They don't actually think that, they want power. The question of the Democrats is, do you want power? And if you say you want it, what are you gonna do to get it, okay? Or are you just gonna go along with this completely sham narrative, you know, on anything having to do with norms around presidential power, legislative power, anything that they won't hold to themselves on the Republican side?
It's a very simple answer.
And I don't believe that Joe Biden does want to expand the court. I just really don't think that. I'm emboldened a little bit by the fact that he won't give a clear answer, but I also can come up with alternative reasons he wouldn't do that that don't have to do with him actually expanding the court eventually.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. Also, you know, Republicans are looking to limit people's rights. Just go through the numbers, the number of Americans who actually want Americans to have rights on a multitude of issues, and be like, you know what, we're not packing courts, we're giving the voice back to the American people. So let's stop with that ridiculous term, packing the courts. What we're doing is, Americans voted for us, look at the numbers. And then after the overwhelming number of Americans voted for us, we're gonna finally do something for them because they voted for us. They've entrusted me with their vote. Now I'm gonna do something. Hey, are you mad at me for going with the American people? You can be against the American people, or I can be for them. Which side are you on? There's many ways to say it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching it. I'm sure you were watching it. We're gonna talk about how she was asked about voter suppression and how it clearly affects black and brown people more than white people. She wouldn't acknowledge it. It's 100% clear. It's the most obvious thing in the world. She won't admit it. Why? Because she doesn't care or she likes it. That's it. That's it. It's as simple as that. We can go through a long list of that. She, like I tweeted, she hasn't said a single thing that I have heard that it even appears to go against one of Donald Trump's interests. And she avoided all the questions about his power to delay elections, manipulate elections, all of that. Because again, she was chosen to give him the election. She's not gonna abstain. And she likely will be, in literally 3 weeks, she will be taking up some of these cases. So it's gonna be a fun rest of 2020. And why shouldn't it be? 2020 so far has been such a delight. Perfectly splendid, actually. Anyway, do you have anything else you want to say about this?
No, I'm done with her.
No, and we shouldn't be. Really sucks that we're in this position, but we are in this position. Yeah. Let's try to bear in mind the people that put us in this position.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Twitter has begun removing fake Twitter accounts purporting to be black supporters of Donald Trump. It was pretty easy to locate them, it turns out, because let's see, we have more than a dozen accounts using identical language, like the phrase in all caps, "Yes, I'm black and I'm voting for Trump," with 3 exclamation points. So generally, when the same accounts are tweeting the exact same thing at the exact same time, that's usually a pretty good sign that it's not real. Many of the suspended accounts are using stolen images, either stock footage or potentially the faces of military members, members of law enforcement, literally soldiers that have died recently. They'll steal those photos. You have ones like this from Caleb Littleford, hashtag Blacks for Trump, saying, "Leaving the Democratic Party has been on my mind for a few weeks now." No, it hasn't, because you don't have a mind because you're a bot. But he goes on to say, not happy with what they've been standing for, and it seems like they just don't want to use black folks for their votes. Is there room on the Trump train? Can I get some retweets and follows? I follow back, and why shouldn't you? Because you're a program. That got 10,000 retweets, despite the fact that that's not a real person. That was a stolen photo that a likely white bot manager put out there to pretend that there's organic black support for Donald Trump. We've got more, but JR, what do you think?
Yeah, I was just gonna, before this story came out, just like a day or two ago, I was just wondering, because I tumbled down a rabbit hole when I was looking into one of Donald Trump's tweets. And then, you know, you have the normal folks who were the first ones to, you know, to criticize him. And then as you go further and further down, you start getting to the supporters. Then you stumble yourself into a side conversation, and then the third side conversation, and the fourth side conversation. Here's all these folks. And I was like, man, the ridiculousness of some of these tweets and the regularity of the things that you can predict that they'll say is just blatant. I was like, who? And then you get some of these, and it's like you said, 10,000 retweets. I was like, there's no way 10,000 people looked at that and said, "Oh, that's a great tweet. It's so original. I hadn't thought of that." And I was like, who watches this stuff? Who looks into it? Who thinks this is real? Who thinks a black person who has any kind of self-respect tweets something that says hashtag blacks for Trump? Black folks don't that care about themselves don't call themselves blacks for Trump. It's just it's too generic of a statement that's been put together by someone else who's controlling you. And it's just inauthentic. I mean, I'm not saying there's no black people that support Republicans. It's just they don't talk like that. You know, it's a weird thing. And the ones that do publicly talk like that are being paid to talk like that. It's just not the way a normal human being talks when they're representing, or they're saying they're representing who they are.
Yeah. There are black individuals that support Donald Trump. There are black individuals who are Republicans even before Donald Trump. There are black grifters who are, you know, whether they organically actually like him or not, are using that to make names for themselves. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the retweets of things like this, I don't doubt that quite a bit of that was probably real. Because there's a lot of Republicans that definitely don't want Donald Trump to do anything, whatever it might be, that would be required to get more black Americans to support him, whatever that policy change would be. They don't want that. And generally, they have no interest in that community whatsoever. But they do like the idea that Trump, being who Trump is, hating who he hates, all of that, would still end up getting some of that support. And so that's why some of these grifters get the spread that they do, because a lot of white Trump supporters who have no love whatsoever for Black Americans still want the idea that it's not just white people that like him. So they'll retweet this, sure. They'll retweet him, and you know, they'll retweet something that Candace Owens said or something like that, and feel like, hey, I'm not that bigoted after all, because I retweeted Caleb Littleford.
Exactly.
Even though Caleb Littleford is, I don't know, some guy named Glenn, some white guy. I don't know.
They're useful, you know, and you know when you're useful, that's, you know, you get paid to be useful. Or once you can't get enough useful people to jump on board because you need larger numbers, you just make them up. So again, it goes back to the same thing. Whenever political figures or even pundits talk about the inorganic nature of democratic uprisings or these protests and all this stuff, they buzz people in, they paid them. It's exactly the playbook that they go off of. And we've seen it countless times. And no matter how many times you see it, they'll just keep doing it because they actually don't care about the people who are smart enough to identify this. They care about the people who aren't smart enough to identify it, and they go and spot all this. Look at all this support for Trump. Did you know there's people on boats? Oh, forget the polls. There's boats. Like, these are the examples that they're given. Another example they're given are Blacks for Trump on Twitter, which isn't a real thing.
Well, and I mean, there was that Saturday event at the White House that had a bunch of Black Trump supporters that was there, and Candace Owens was involved in it. And it turned out that they had been paying people to fly in, like covering their travel expenses, which, by the way, I don't have as big of a problem with that as some. You can do that. That doesn't mean that those people don't like Donald Trump. But think about what it means, though, that in Washington, D.C., how many millions of people live inside of a 45-minute drive of D.C.? They had to fly people in because they couldn't find a crowd of 200 Black people in Washington, D.C. that like the president. So they can do it if they want, but we get to acknowledge what it means that they had to. And so anyway, I'm glad that Trump is Trump, that Twitter is doing this. If they could find I understand that the techniques that these bot farms use continues to change and everything, but it's just so much of Twitter is so fake and so manipulated. They've got to get better at it. I mean, this lasted for so long. I don't know. We'll see.
If minimal effort gets you maximum results, why would you add to your effort?
I guess they're doing fine without taking it more seriously. Maybe they don't need to take it more seriously. Donald Trump at his rally last night tried to make his final appeal to, he'll say, suburban women. He means white women who don't like him as much as they did in 2016. Here is his desperate begging to get them back on his side.
Middle aliens, raise your taxes, confiscate your guns, get rid of your Second Amendment. I mean, here's one that's incredible. Destroy your suburbs. Okay, so they talk about the suburban women. And somebody said, I don't know if the suburban woman likes you. I say, why? But we had this. I love you too. They said, they may not like the way you talk, but I'm about law and order. I'm about having you safe. I'm about having your suburban communities. I don't want to build low-income housing next to your house, okay? If that's okay. And I ended the regulation, the rule that made the zoning so impossible that you had to destroy your communities. And then I hear the suburban woman. I think that the suburban woman, and I used to say suburban housewife, I used to take heat, but I said, does anybody care? Do you care if I say suburban? No, they're all going, no. Again, the only one cares is them. Trump said suburban housewife, but I didn't say it because I don't. You learn very quickly. You learn very quickly. But suburban women, they should like me more than anybody here tonight because I ended the regulation that destroyed your neighborhood. I ended the regulation that brought crime to the suburbs, and you're going to live the American dream, and that's what you're going to do.
Okay, so it's about to get even more racist and patronizing and pathetic in the second bit. I like our audience. I can't make him watch 2 minutes and 19 seconds all at once. So we're gonna talk about this part first. JR, he keeps saying the word suburban, but I feel like that's not what he means. I kind of feel like he means something else there.
Anytime it talks about low income and bringing people in, all those are the same trigger words and phrases for what we've always seen. So these suburban women and also the suburban housewife, we know it's the suburbs are supposed to be this escape from those urban areas. What's the opposite of the suburban? The urban. So what is another term people used to, before they started calling them blacks for Trump, was those urban people. What are those urban people? They're minorities and they're scary. You know those high crime areas? What's the first city they always bring up? Chicago. That's right. Those urban areas of crime, infested areas, because all they do is run around and terrorize their own neighborhoods and destroy things. We've heard it all. It's all built up. It's a part of the same narrative. There's no dog whistles. This is a straight normal whistle. And you know, he's been called out on it. It doesn't matter because he wanted that, you know. So there's no calling someone out on something that they're exposing themselves for. So it's It is what it is at this point. And at this point, the way that he's losing women support from women, I don't know if it's suburban women or urban women or somewhere in the middle, he's losing them all. And I think, yeah, I'm not sure who he's to tell him, hey, we got to bail on this part of the stump speech because it's kind of senseless. Nobody cares.
He's, I mean, like, remember, we have to hold two possible explanations in our mind as we watch all of the rest of Trump's campaigning. He's amazing at politics, or he got kind of a little bit lucky in 2016 and narrowly squeaked by a win in the Electoral College, and it turns out they ain't actually that amazing. Is this a good appeal? We're gonna have more in this segment, not just about women, but about senior citizens as well. Is he a political genius, as many continue to think, or did he just get kind of lucky? No. All that he just said there is insane. Yeah, look. He obviously means white women. That's clearly what he means. The whole thing about ending the regulation and stopping the low income people. First of all, how many people in that crowd before Trump started talking about it thought about that even once in their entire life? Maybe they didn't want low income people or whatever he actually means by that, which is pretty clear. But they weren't thinking about that regulation. They just like that they get what he means, that it's made for them and it's very clear. Also, bear in mind when he keeps talking about how low people without money are gonna ruin your American dream, remember that he's a right-wing populist. He cares about people who've been left behind and economically hurt and have economic anxiety. That's why he's demonizing people without money constantly as his final campaign tactic. Just bear that in mind when hearing about right-wing populism. Doesn't tend to go all that deep. As soon as it intersects with race, suddenly they're going in a different direction, oddly enough. But anyway, we're gonna have the numbers on the women because JR, you asked about it. Before we get to that though, let's watch the second part of this where it gets truly grovelly.
And remember this, 29% of the people experiencing the American dream in the suburbs happen to be minority. And you don't know that, but 29%. And we're doing this for everybody. We're not doing it one way or the other. We're doing it. And I ended it. They said, sir, we can amend it. I said, no, I don't want to amend it. I want to end it. It was a horror show. And this loser, Cory Booker, is the guy that's going to be in charge of the program. The guy's a stone cold loser. 1%. He got 1%. He ran. He was going to be great. You know, 1%. Every week. He was like her. Down, down, down. They should have picked him. But no, he'll be in charge of your suburban. So can I ask you to do me a favor? Suburban women, will you please like me? Remember? Please. Please. I saved your damn neighborhood, okay? The other thing, I don't have that much time to be that nice. You know, I can do it, but I gotta go.
Okay. Yeah, that video brought to you by the Grovel Institute. Will you please like me? It's the Jeb Bush, please like. That's all it is.
Please clap.
JR, did you notice So really, really fast. So he brought up Cory Booker. Why? Nobody could figure out why he brought up Cory Booker. But that's racist, obviously. But it went a step further because that video that we just showed you was literally to the second a continuation of the last one we showed you. It's 2.5 minutes. When he said he was like her, why did he immediately transition to just a her? He didn't even say who the her is. He's minutes into a rant. It's not about Kamala Harris, but that's who he was talking about there. Why? You know exactly why that's the transition he made. Oh my God.
He's like, okay, a couple of presidential candidates that I can come up with that were black folks because that's where my brain is. And then he also, you know, he also interrupted himself to point out that he's not being racist by talking about the 29% of black folks that live the American dream in the suburbs. So Is this a guilty conscience? Are you making sure that you're going to go ahead and address what everyone knows is happening? And also, he mentioned that American dream of living in the suburbs. I mean, I don't live in the suburbs, and I can probably poll a significant number of people that don't, that would think that's the American nightmare to live in the suburbs. Nobody, everybody isn't flocking to the suburbs. This isn't 1957. Again, he still lives there. And that's where he sees this whole suburban housewife thing. It's why he had to address the suburban housewife, because it's 1957. Everybody's June Cleaver and everybody's wearing pearls and high heels while they cook chili. That's what he sees America as. And anyone else that isn't that are un-American, or they're these weird either minorities or immigrants that are coming in to destroy your America. Because that's the racist screed. It's we're living this nice pristine life, and we just ran away from those urban centers. And now we're living this nice pristine life, and they're out here trying to take over that too. How dare they? They're coming for my daughter. I'm waiting for the stump speech where he mentions your suburban housewives, you're looking to protect your daughters, right? It's coming.
Yeah, would he do it? Would he do it? His fans would love it.
Tucker Carlson already did it.
They're gonna drag you out.
He's like the pimps or like OnlyFans is the pimps, and your lily white daughter is the prostitute.
Jesus.
How do people what do people picture pimps as? What gender and what race? When you dress up for Halloween, you're like, I'm gonna be a pimp, and you put on that stupid hat and a purple suit. Who are you emulating?
Well, I would say the first two things in order that I picture, one is Cosmo Kramer from Seinfeld dressed as a pimp, because that was a great episode. Two is the guy from Project Veritas. He's a very serious investigative reporter. Don't forget that. Anyway, okay, so Trump is making his appeal to suburban women. Won't you please like me? No, they won't. They hate your guts, and they should. So let's talk about recent polls. An average of the last five live interview polls puts Biden up by 25 points among women voters. That includes a 34-point margin in CNN's poll released last week. A 34-point poll. Trump is getting trounced by women. He's as unliked as me in high school. Anyway, no candidate of either party. This is amazing for some history. No candidate of either party in the polling era has ever led among women voters by more than 24 points in the final pre-election polls. This includes the blowout elections of 1964 and 72, which Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon took by more than 20 points respectively. So even in these blowout elections, where they won by more than double digits, they still couldn't rack up a lead among women that Biden, who isn't leading by 20 points, is getting amongst them. Trump is hated by a lot of people, but women love to hate Trump. That much is clear at this point.
Please love me. I still don't know why. Maybe I'm waiting for one of these ads to come out. Maybe we should make one. The comparison between Jeb and the please clap and the please love me. This isn't the first time either. Trump is always begging people to like him. Can you guys like me now? That's the basis for his entire existence. Is can you like me? Because I'm a horrible person and I need your validation in order to continue on with this charade of a campaign. I'm tired, yeah. John.
I know. Last bit of context. Clinton won women by 13 points among likely voters and 14 points among registered voters in the final pre-election polls. So Biden is doing almost twice as well in the gap among women rather than Hillary Clinton. And that to me is a demonstration of that people know Trump better than they did in 2016, and Biden doesn't have some of the baggage that Hillary Clinton did. Some of it earned, some of it not, that dragged her down in that way. But really fast, let's transition to another area, because he's got his plea out to women. Please, suburban women, love me. Trump doesn't just need suburban women. He also could really use some senior citizens. And he's got some interesting last minute strategies for appealing to them. You might remember that he had that weird green screened White House lawn video where he told them that they're not actually at a greater risk from contracting or dying from COVID, which is, you know, as campaign strategies go, trying to kill them is an odd one. But he's following that up by a little bit of mockery. This is insult to injury. So he tweeted out this photo of Joe Biden. You can see that Joe Biden's head has been photoshopped onto a person in a nursing home with Biden for resident put there. Because the joke is, if you don't get the joke is that he lives at a nursing home, and that's stupid and lame, and people who live at nursing homes suck and are awful. That's basically what the joke is, JR. Yeah, do you think this is gonna get some of those old voters over there?
You know, old people that are in need of assistance and enough that they live in a nursing home, you know, they're weak, they're stupid, their lives are over. There's nothing to them. This has straight up been said, especially as we see COVID ravage, you know, elderly communities or people that have pre-existing conditions, all those things. We see how anytime someone passes away, they go, oh, well, that guy was just old. You know, well, old people are just gonna die. We saw this multiple times. There's a disdain for old folks. Only thing that they care about old folks are is their vote. And somehow Trump missed that one small thing. The Republican Party is supposed to exploit them and act like you care about them. Trump is so busy, he's hung up with this like weakness thing or this, you know, that's why he has this issue with when he contracted COVID was, his problem was he didn't want to be seen as weak. So anyone that's weak or a sucker or an idiot, he has to distance himself from. So the worst thing he can do to Joe Biden is retweet this picture of him looking like an old person in a nursing home because isn't that horrible? Doesn't he look like a sucker?
Yeah.
Look at him, he's all skinny and frail sitting in a chair. That's who this guy is, that's who he's always been. That's who he's always been. And then every time we see it, we just go, oh, well, that's just Trump. He's just counterpunching. Okay, he counterpunching.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and by the way, remember that Trump is what, like a week out of his round the clock care from a team of more than a dozen doctors at Walter Reed. Yeah, but it's Biden who like needs to be waited on hand and foot. Now, I saw in the Twitch chat that Octosquiddy says that we're being too hard, that it's a joke, we have no sense of humor. You might be right. Like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe old people will look at that tweet if they see it at all, and hopefully they're not on Twitter because they don't need that kind of stress in the twilight, you know, years of their life. Maybe they'll see that and think that it's funny. I don't know. It just to me seems kind of tone deaf. Like and to me it's emblematic that I just don't think that he's the political genius that some people learned the lesson of 2016 as being. That he is one. I don't think he's that good at this. He is very good in a limited way. He is basically a political grifter. Grifters are good at identifying an audience and dominating in it by giving them what they want. It's not about broad appeal. It's not about getting millions of people to like you. It's about getting enough to love you and give you money. It's Stormfront from the boys. And grifters can do that with media, and Trump can do that with the Republican base. It was enough to get him through the Republican primary. And for a number of reasons that are complex, it was enough to get him narrowly elected president. But that does not mean that he's a political genius, that he actually gets how people think outside of that very narrow grift of his. And so he's got this. And I will say, it's like he needs those people. Joe Biden fired back, responding to that video I talked about, saying to senior citizens, you're expendable, you're forgettable, you're virtually nobody. That's how he sees seniors. The only senior that Donald Trump cares about, the only senior is the senior Donald Trump. And so which strategy is working? Well, a recent Washington Post ABC News poll found that the two candidates, both the oldest ever nominated by their parties, were neck and neck with voters 65 and older, with Biden at 49% and Trump at 48%. The race is similarly tight in Florida, which is one of the largest oldest voting blocks in the nation. Now you might see that and think, well, they're neck and neck, so they're doing equally well. But no, Republicans are supposed to lead by quite a bit amongst that demographic. They need to win, and so far, he's not actually doing that.
Yeah, I want to address the joke aspect. Okay. This was just a joke, right? It was just a joke. You know, there's and maybe senior citizens or maybe older folks that are in nursing homes shouldn't take offense to it. Maybe some will, maybe some won't. There's also jokes about black folks being criminals. There's also about jokes about women being hysterical and emotional and can't control themselves. There's jokes about women having their periods every month and how that affects them. There's jokes about Asian folks who can't drive. There's jokes about immigrants. There's jokes about Latinos who have cantaloupe-sized calves, as Steve King said, jokes about them being rapists and murderers and criminals. There's all kinds of jokes. And as those jokes are directed at certain groups of people, I don't think those groups of people are laughing about them and saying, I'm gonna vote for that guy. So you can make the jokes all you want at your racist ass parties all you want. Make those jokes there and laugh with your racists. But once you're trying to run for office, you're not gonna get anywhere making jokes about the people that are voting for you. It's a very simple 2+2 equation. So I'm sick of the jokes. Let's keep telling jokes while we're running for office and think that we're gonna get somewhere by telling jokes. Hey, go back to Mar-a-Lago with your racist friends and tell your jokes there. Those jokes aren't gonna fly here with people. So I don't care that you think elderly people just don't matter anymore and they're not gonna take offense to this. And if they don't, that's on them. But if I'm an older person, I'm sitting in a nursing home, I take offense to that and you're not getting my vote. Straight up, which one is it? Are you a politician or are you a jokester? Because by the way, the jokes aren't funny.
Yeah, and if he does end up losing in that demographic, the joke is on him, honestly. And I could be wrong, he could still win, blah, 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 all that stuff. But it doesn't seem like a good strategy. The polling doesn't seem to show that it's really working for him. So we'll see, we'll see. So I probably don't need to tell you all about the big unmasking scandal because you all already know about it if you exclusively get your news from Fox News. If you're a normal human, you probably don't know anything about it because it's nonsense. It's a big fever dream on the right. But it also turns out that they turned up bupkis in their investigation. So let me just quickly run you through this since you're not gonna hear any more about it on Fox News. So the federal prosecutor appointed by Attorney General William Barr to review whether Obama era officials improperly requested the identities of individuals whose names were redacted in intelligence documents, the so-called unmasking, has completed his work without finding any substantive wrongdoing, according to two people familiar with the matter. Now, a little bit more on this unmasking. Though unmasking is common and appropriate because it allows government officials to better understand a document they're reading, Trump and others suggested the list of requests that ultimately revealed Mike Flynn's name showed wrongdoing. So the Obama administration did a thing that is done, and the Trump administration said, nuh-uh, that shows that this is literally the biggest scandal in American history. That is what Sean Hannity has said and Lou Dobbs has said and all of that. So they started this investigation and the idea was gonna be, we might show that there was actually harm done by this. And even if we don't, all the talk all along the way will be beneficial to us. So they got that. This was a big topic of discussion on Fox News. And now it turns out, No, nothing was done. It wasn't out of the norm. No harm was done. And that is why William Barr is not gonna be talking about it. Sean Hannity's not gonna be talking about it. JR, would you like to be the last person in American media to talk about this?
Well, yeah, I would love that. Well, there's two patterns in play here, you know, especially with Barr's Department of Justice looking to protect Trump or deflect from all of his scandals at the same time, is there's so many things that they're addressing that they have to deflect and act like it was someone else that did it to them, that even their supporters probably can't keep up with the number of scandals. They're like, wait a second, I thought we were talking about Burisma and Ukraine. Wait a second, what about Russian interference? Hey, but then we have to also talk about the dossier. Oh, then we gotta talk about the interference. Oh, they tried to get him out. Like, they can't keep track of all of the ridiculous lies that they're trying to deflect and call baseless and toothless that are looking just to subvert this president, and he deserves 12 more years, whatever talking points that they wanna bring up at the particular moment. So even their supporters probably can't keep up with one scandal deflection from the next. So even this, if it turned up, if they had decided to fake something to turn up from it, I don't think many people really would have glummed onto it. Because it reminds me of Ron Johnson, Senator Johnson, and Chuck Grassley. They did that probe into Ukraine, Burisma, Hunter Biden. We're gonna come with there's gonna be some concrete evidence to talk about what he did and how he did it and how much he profited and how his father helped him. You know what came of that, John? Did you hear about this? Can I tell you what came of that investigation?
What?
Nothing, just like this last one. And after they talked all this big game for so long, after nothing came up, there was something that they decided to hide. There was one testimony that came from Ron Johnson's his thing. His witness said that Rick Perry, he was working for under Trump, and he said there was a scheme where they had corruption efforts where he forced this Ukraine company to actually hire someone else that was along with Republican buddies to enrich him. That came of the investigation that Ron Johnson was trying to get something on Hunter Biden for. We didn't hear about that part because they're like, well, as we were trying to come up with bogus information, we actually got some real corruption information from an official that was put in place under this president. Let's not do that part, is what the conclusion was. So now that Barr now has another investigation that's come up with nothing, all he can say now is, well, let me be quiet. You know, there's like multiple, I think CNN even did it, multiple instances where Trump was talking about, this is the biggest news story. No one else needs to talk about anything else. Do you guys understand what the Obama administration did to me? I would love for him to talk about it today.
I would love for him to explain in plain language clearly what he thinks the story is, and I guarantee he can't. Which is fine. Look, this has been referred to as the Fox Cinematic Universe. It's like if I were to reference something in particular that Drax did, and you don't watch those movies, it wouldn't make any sense. That's what this is. Trump's problem is that he's like a nerd like me who doesn't get that not everybody watches these movies. So at the debate, he made references to stories that you would have to be deep into the Fox Cinematic Universe to know what the reference is. And he doesn't actually understand, just like I can't explain the plot to Thor 2, The Dark World. I can't. I've seen it twice. Can't explain the plot. That is Donald Trump. I can make reference to it. I just did. Can't explain what it's actually about. Just like they won't be able to explain soon what the new Hunter Biden story is. Rudy Giuliani got a laptop with some emails on it or something. It's nonsense. It's a spinoff. I don't think it's gonna be a great one. Yeah, so this is nonsense. Yeah, and by the way, this is just another thing when the whole deep state thing blew up and some people who should have known better, actually gave it the time of day. No, it is BS. It is propaganda. That's what it is. We need to understand that.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, keeping it in mind, the number of people that actually got something from this, or the 12 to 15 people that took all these investigations and see it as fact, think of how much money we've wasted on these investigations from the Department of Justice to actually go after that. While we didn't go after real criminals, we still haven't addressed the white supremacy terrorism problem in the country because they're too busy going after these types of things that American taxpayers are paying for. And at the end of it, just kind of fizzles out and we don't talk about it anymore. We're talking about a waste of money. This is one of them.
Yeah, massive. Yeah, exactly. So they'll talk about how much they spent on the Mueller report. How much was spent on this? I don't know. I honestly really don't care compared to everything else that they spend money on, but it certainly costs money and time. Anyway, okay, so really fast, let's roll into our next story because we got two more stories to get to and time is a wasting. So let's roll through to this. Donald Trump has spent 7 months lying to the American people about the coronavirus, not providing any leadership, but doing whatever he can seemingly to do PR for the virus. But there is an election in 3 weeks and he needs to pretend that none of that is true. And so he is going to deceptively, dishonestly, and non-consensually use Dr. Fauci, who is the only person who's worked for Donald Trump this entire time that the people still trust, to pretend that that man supports his re-election. Take a look at this ad.
President Trump is recovering from the coronavirus, and so is America. Together, we rose to meet the challenge, protecting our seniors, getting them life-saving drugs in record time, sparing no expense. President Trump tackled the virus head-on, as leaders should.
I can't imagine that anybody could be doing more.
We'll get through this together. We'll live carefully, but not afraid.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
Yes, so Trump approves the message. You know who doesn't approve the message? Anthony Fauci, as was made clear here in his appearance on the news.
You quickly came out with a statement that noted that that sentence had been taken out of context. You were talking about the whole of government response, not President Trump. And of course, you've never endorsed a presidential candidate in your 5 decades of public service. Should the Trump campaign take this ad down?
You know, I think so, Jake. I think it's really unfortunate and really disappointing that they did that. It's so clear that I'm not a political person, and I have never either directly or indirectly endorsed a political candidate. And to take a completely out of context statement and put it in, which is obviously a political campaign ad, I thought was really very disappointing.
What would you say if I told you I heard that the Trump campaign was actually preparing to do another ad featuring you?
You know, that would be terrible. I mean, that would be outrageous if they do that. In fact, that might actually come back to backfire on them. I hope they don't do that because that would be kind of playing a game that we don't want to play. So I hope they reconsider that.
Okay, so JR, I'm gonna have a follow-up for you, but what's your first reaction to Trump using it and then Fauci acknowledging that he had no interest in being in that ad?
You know, when you finally see someone hitting the breaking point, people with the utmost patience, you may see them with their kids or something. You're like, man, that guy is so calm. Like, he can put up with anything. And it's kind of been the persona that Fauci has been showing us. I mean, maybe behind the scenes, he loses his temper. Maybe behind the scenes, he goes, hey, stop that. But I think publicly, he's finally getting fed up. And he's like, okay, you guys, okay. He knows he's coming out looking great amongst all these things, but there's only so much someone can take when they're personally continually put out there as this shield or barrier between truth and reality. I mean, truth and Trump's lies. So anytime Trump now says, I'm just gonna take a half a sentence from him and toss it in his campaign video, he's like, okay, like you can have come out there and try to clean up your ridiculousness. Sure, that's part of my job. But it's come some point when you stop talking to me and you start using my words without my permission. Okay, I've hit the breaking point and the baby's got to be put in timeout.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess my follow-up is, it was subtle, but was that not a threat? Did he not threaten Trump in that?
About this,
I don't know if he'd want to do this. Yeah, this is a game he might not want to play and all that. Like, is he saying that if they keep putting him in ads, what, that he would be in a Biden ad or something? That he would come out more critical and say something critical of Trump? Can you imagine if Fauci is the October surprise? And he comes out with like a full interview. This MF-er didn't give a damn. He wants the herd mentality. And let me tell you about how dumb he is, because he's real dumb. Can you imagine?
It'll be like the Woodward taste. Maybe he's been recording him somehow. And you know, without selling a book, so there's actually more trust behind it. That'd be nice. One person to finally do that.
That conversation where where Fauci had to explain to him why you can't just let millions of people die. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter if it comes out, because that's been news for months and months and nobody seems to care. By the way, super fast, a little update. We're in, I don't know, the 30th step of the herd mentality thing. The Trump administration supported some sort of like all these doctors had signed on to you should do a herd immunity. And it turned out that like dozens of their names were like Joey Bananas and stuff like that. Like, it was total BS. But the Trump administration just supported it. Because again, remember, they don't support herd immunity, except they keep supporting herd immunity constantly. But anyway, so they used him in the ad. He doesn't want to be used in the ad. The Trump campaign has defended its decision to feature Fauci in the ad, saying they are indeed Dr. Fauci's own words. Yes, but taken out of context and not specifically about Donald Trump at all. Donald Trump went a step further, maybe responding to that implicit threat there, saying, actually, Tony's pitching arm is far more accurate than his prognostications. Longest word Trump has ever used. Definitely looked it up before he typed it. No problem, no masks. WHO no longer likes lockdowns. Just came out against. Trump was right. We saved 2 million USA lives. So
which one is it? Is it that Fauci, his fastball isn't there? Or is it that he's in a campaign ad of yours saying that you're awesome, taken out of context? You can't have it both ways. You can't say he can't toss and he has no prognostications, but you can say that he's in my ad endorsing me and that's supposed to be a positive. Which one is it? Which one is it, bro?
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. So why if he's so terrible, he's awful, why do you have him in the ad? And also, like, again, it's the 50th time we've acknowledged this now, but that no problem, no masks thing was like day one of the pandemic, trying to avoid people buying up all the masks so doctors couldn't get it. And after that, we've had 7 months of everyone desperately begging the president to acknowledge what scientists say, which is we need to encourage people to wear masks. He has since gotten coronavirus and still won't acknowledge that, but he's not going to at this point. And by the way, JR, Tony's pitching arm is far more accurate. Do you get what that's a reference to?
When he had that the opening pitch, right? Am I right? At the Nationals game?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So he's mocking Fauci for the bad throw, but do you get why he's doing that?
Because Trump is afraid to do it?
No. Well, I think it's because Trump is butthurt that he wasn't offered the opportunity. Oh,
that's right. I forgot.
This is now deep into, I guess, our cinematic universe. Trump said that he had been asked to do it, And he had to say no because he had an event that he had to do. I'd be doing it, but I have an event. And then on that day, the day that he had said he was gonna do, he couldn't do it because he had the event, he went golfing. So like, he is so jealous that Fauci got to, you know, to the extent that he did throw the first pitch. He's still thinking about it months later.
Yeah, and actually, you know what? Wasn't the Yankees or something that came out and said, yeah, we said we would do it, but we didn't offer him to do it on this day.
Yeah, totally.
He made the whole thing up.
Yeah, so look, they said that they're going to have him in more ads. If that happens, Dr. Fauci, come on, you told him that something would happen if he does that. So you start recording your ads right now. You can come on the channel, I'll interview. We can talk about Donald Trump and the coronavirus. I got no problem with that. Mitch McConnell just recently debated Amy McGrath. It might be the only debate we get out of them, especially after Mitch McConnell didn't exactly have the best performance. Here he is cackling like a drunk tortoise as Amy McGrath talks about the pandemic.
The House passed a bill in May, and the Senate went on vacation. I mean, you just don't do that. You negotiate. Senator, it is a national crisis. Yeah. You knew that the coronavirus wasn't going to end at the end of July. We knew this. I mean, I just think you've got to. And here's the thing, if you want to call yourself a leader.
So, Bill.
If you want to call yourself a leader, you got to get things done. And those of us that served in the Marines, we don't just point fingers at the other side. We get the job done.
That face is going to haunt my dreams.
Oh my God.
So, JR, that was Mitch McConnell, one of the most powerful people in the country, that thinks that his lack of leadership during the coronavirus is a very, very funny joke.
Again, I'm not sure. It's not going to stick the same way, but we saw the vice presidential debate last week, whenever that was. I feel like it was a year ago. But we saw how people are going to analyze every head turn, head nod, head shake, eyebrow raise, nose scratch, ear wiggle that Kamala Harris was going to have that whole night. And she was aware of it. And that's why many of us were upset at her not firing the way that we know that she can at Mike Pence, because she knew the way people would take it. And they took it that, by the way, some people did take it that way anyway, even though she sat there the whole time and went. That was the problem they had with her. Mitch McConnell can laugh about ignoring relief bills for people that have suffered greatly during the pandemic that the president ignored and downplayed and largely facilitated. He can laugh about it and not be concerned that the whole cycle of the next news day is Mitch McConnell, who's holding up COVID relief bills, is laughing about it to your face. He's laughing when someone is holding his feet to the fire for the first time, because he avoids talking to real people. He goes to the Senate floor and lies. Then he goes and consults with Donald Trump to coordinate their lies. Then he goes, finally has a chance to address his issues, and he laughs at you. Do you want someone who's laughing at you? Imagine if someone who was in charge of the country screwed it up this badly and laughed at you, and they were Democrat. Destruction, destruction. It'd be 24/7 news cycle about how they laughed at you after your father, your mother, your brother, your sister, your niece, your nephew, someone in your life, your best friend died of this. And then now, because maybe one of those people died, or you're suffering because you don't have a job, or you're suffering because your kid is now working remotely in school and you have to back off on your job, which is a big problem with many people in this country as well, he's laughing at you. As your kid is at the computer desk and trying to work on Zoom and their head hits the table and start crying, Mitch McConnell's laughing at you. Hey, you know that cough that you got that could be a natural, normal cough, and then you're suddenly panicked like, oh my God, who did I see? Did my mask drop down that one time at the grocery store? Oh, there was that one guy who walked right close next to me. I'm panicked. I gotta go get a test. Mitch McConnell is laughing at you.
Yeah.
It's a straightforward, simple thing. And this isn't like any kind of political hyperbole. It's exactly what's happening. He's laughing at his inaction on helping people who are panicked and people who have lost others and that their lives will never be the same again. Is his life upside down? Did his wife die? He has grown adult kids now. Is anyone in his life having to struggle through this whole thing? No, they're not. And he's laughing at you because you are.
You're 100% right. JR, you should definitely make commercials. Yeah, just play the beginning of that, say he's laughing at the pandemic, and then just start reading statistics and then play him laughing again, and then, you know, show some families that are struggling to make ends meet and then play him laughing. You're 100% right. Quick note, really hope that Amy McGrath beats him. don't think it's going to happen for a couple of different reasons. One, the polling, take a look at this. That's just some of the recent polls. He's winning by 5 to 12 points, 15. He's doing very well. And look, he looked bad in that part, and she's sort of saying the right thing, but she's not bringing it strong. Like, and if you look at her ads, she has one of the sort of messages of her campaign for some time now has been that the reason Mitch McConnell is bad is that he's not doing enough to give Trump what he needs or what he wants, that he's sort of an obstruction on the path to Trump. She said that early on. They had these like animated ads where Mitch McConnell is like an obstacle to Trump getting. It's like it's maddening. Like, it's a parody of the Democrats just trying to appeal to Republicans rather than those on the left thing. Like, this is stronger than I've ever seen before. Hope that she wins. Don't think it's going to happen. And we could have had a much better candidate in that race. But anyway, sure. Yeah, the polls don't look good. He's still the bad guy because he could have passed, you know, more stimulus 6 months ago. He doesn't want to because he doesn't care. He doesn't care if people lose their jobs. Doesn't care if they lose their homes, get evicted, doesn't care if they live or die. He's like a lot of Republicans in that way, but he's the most powerful and thus the most culpable.
Yeah, so the best thing you can do at this point, since it seems like he's gonna win, is this is a potential for other people in other states, flip the Senate and strip him of that level of power that he had. Yeah. He can still be there, and he's going to be, it looks like. So let's go ahead and put him in a position where he can't control things the way he has.
I agree. That would be one of the best things that can happen. There are a lot, you know, Lindsey Graham losing, oh, that'd be great. Susan Collins losing, would be wonderful. But him not being the majority leader would be amazing and so necessary,
Absolutely.
Anyway, JR, thank you for joining us for a big news Wednesday. Appreciate it as always.
I'm gonna go order my Dragon Squad shirt. Immediately.
Nice.
And by order, I mean, I'm gonna go ask the folks at Shop2IT to send me one.
Exactly. They should. Okay, I'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.
For sure. See you guys.
All eyes are on Texas in this election, not only because hypothetically, if Texas were to go for Joe Biden, that's pretty much it for the election, at least electorally. And also because I lived in Texas for a number of years, but I can't visit there right now. So you know what we did? We found someone who's been doing some amazing reporting actually in Texas on the ground. The Guardian's US Southern Bureau Chief, Oliver Lachlan, welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Very glad to have you here. You have a video of you interviewing both some candidates in Texas as well as regular voters. There's a lot that I want to get into. What did you find most surprising as you investigated what direction Texas is going in?
Well, I think the thing that I found most surprising was there is a very real and palpable feeling amongst Democrats that this state is in play. You know, we can talk about record voter registration that's been happening in Texas. And also, obviously, as we all know, the sort of rapidly changing demographics of the state. So the fact that Hispanic Americans are going to be the majority in Texas by 2022 is having a seismic impact on the way in which presidential and congressional politics and political campaigning, I think, is working in the state at the moment.
Well, so you mentioned there voter registration. I had seen, I haven't confirmed independently, but that Travis County in particular, something like 97% of the eligible voters has registered to vote, which seems even pretty hard to believe. But are you seeing evidence in your research that this is fundamentally different than in past elections? Because, you know, Democrats have been saying Texas is on the cusp of turning for some time now. So what seems different this time?
I mean, I think that's certainly true. So my reporting was based in two locations. I think probably the most relevant one to talk about is 24th Congressional District, which has been a stronghold for the Republican Party for just under two decades. And the incumbent Congressman, Kenny Marchant, has sort of retired. And it's now two first-time congressional candidates going at each other, who I think almost sort of emblematic of the changes and the stasis that's happening in on both sides of politics at the moment. So Candace Valenzuela, who is running for the Democratic Party there, is running to become the first Afro-Latina elected to Congress. She is a progressive Democratic candidate who used to serve on her local school board. And I think in many ways kind of embraces and is representative of the changes that are going on in that district. This is a suburban district And you know, like I said, she's been there for a long time, and is really sort of building what I would say is a grassroots coalition of progressives from all different walks of life. She's running against a woman called Beth Van Dyne, who you may remember from 2015 caused a lot of national controversy after she suggested that a newly constructed Islamic tribunal in the city of Irvine, of which she was the mayor of, could lead to Sharia law in the city. And so to me, she was a pretty strong embodiment of Trumpist republicanism. And these two people are facing off against each other in a sort of rapidly changing suburban district that could very well, for the first time, go Democratic. Mm.
So how many years into Sharia law in that district are we at now?
Zero. I mean, unfortunately, one of the things that we came into contact with was Van Dyne not wanting to talk to us. And so we reached out to obviously both sides of the aisle because we want to be, representative of both sides of political views there. Candace, who is campaigning from home, so she has an immunocompromised younger son, and she lives with an elderly mother-in-law, is doing her entire campaign from home. So they're not door knocking, she's not going out, she's doing everything on Zoom and that sort of thing. Beth is out and about door knocking and has been since we were there. We were there a short while ago now. And unfortunately, her campaign initially told us that there were no in-person events for us to attend. I could see that she was out campaigning and door knocking, and we were a bit concerned that wasn't necessarily truthful. She then took to Twitter and decided to call me a liberal hack, which again is pretty indicative of the times we're living in, I think.
Yeah, geez. Well, you're really fitting a lot of what the Republican Party is in just a little bit of reporting. Okay, so you've said a little bit about the changing demographics in terms of just who lives in Texas. There were some people talking in the video that you put up of that they've seen that there's a lot of immigrants coming in and living there. I'm interested. I don't know if you saw this. There was some sort of write-up in the past few days talking about how the GOP efforts over the past decade or two to really make Texas as business friendly as possible might have led to a lot of companies, including tech companies, coming in that then draw liberals into the state. Did you see, I know you were only in two locations, but did you see any evidence that immigration inside of the US was bringing liberals to Texas and that might have an effect?
It's certainly a Republican talking point, and a lot of the Republicans who did want to speak to us, so we spent some time with the Tarrant County GOP, were kind of talking about that. One of the things that I really came into contact with, actually lifelong Texas residents who were the children of immigrants, these are kind of young first-time voters who were able to vote for the first time in a presidential election. So we spent some time on a college campus, Texas Women's College, where a group called Jolt Action, who are a progressive Latinx voter registration group, were out trying to harness some support for trying to get people registered. They're nonpartisan. And it was very, very palpable to me that a lot of the people they were speaking to were first-time voters who had come from, whose parents had not been born in this country, some of whom had crossed the border themselves, were motivated by what they had seen the administration do over the past 4 years at the southern border. A lot of people were appalled at child separation. They were appalled at construction of the wall, and were really talking about using the power of their vote try and make change. Now, obviously, we can talk about all the voter suppression efforts that exist in Texas at the moment. Most recently, a court decision that is now going to prevent early voting drop-off locations to just one location per county, which obviously, when you're talking about somewhere like Tarrant County that has over 1 million residents, is hugely detrimental to the democratic process there. But that aside, I really got a sense of a huge amount of enthusiasm amongst first-time voters from immigrant backgrounds who wanted to use their vote to make change.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you brought up the voter suppression. I know that you spoke with quite a few conservatives in the video that you posted. Many of them saying that they haven't voted before, sort of implying that they didn't need to vote, but that now they will. Did you happen to talk to them about any of this voter suppression, the ballot drop-off location? You mentioned in the video that the way that you go about registering for vote is very archaic. Did that come up in your conversations with conservatives?
Not so much in Texas, just purely because actually we were there before that decision was made by the governor. So it wasn't really an issue that people were talking about back then. But certainly, you know, I've just been in Georgia and been talking to people on both sides of the aisle about, rampant voter suppression that goes on in Georgia. And again, you kind of come into the same, you come into contact with the same sort of arguments that Republicans have been making for a very long time, which is all about, you know, election security, talking about the idea of fraud, paranoia around mail-in voting, and that sort of thing. Obviously, all of which is factually inaccurate. But yeah, I mean, those are the sort of talking points that you come into contact with really wherever you are in the country.
Exactly. The Democrats you talked to in Texas, especially the elected ones, ones who are running, are they, I'm assuming they're genuinely worried about this voter suppression in the context of a pandemic, limiting early voting and things like that seems especially toxic. What are the expectations about the effect that might have this November?
Well, I think if you look at, you know, past precedent, how close the gubernatorial race was in Georgia, for example, in 2018, where these rapidly evolving states in the South, like Georgia, like Texas, are being won by Republicans on increasingly thin margins. There is very real and valid concern that a state like Texas could be won by a much smaller margin by the Republican Party, for example, and that voter suppression could play a factor in that outcome. And I think when you look at races like the 24th congressional district, where this could be incredibly, incredibly close, it's only reasonable to think that this sort of effort to stymie the democratic process and to stop people from casting their ballot could have a real effect on democracy.
Yeah. I know we were speaking before the interview that you have follow-up reporting that's going to be coming out soon. Can you give us a little bit of a preview of what we can expect?
Sure. So the series that I'm doing is a series called Anywhere But Washington, which is The Guardian's kind of multimedia series looking at the election from all different parts of the country. So our first episode was in Florida, the second episode that you mentioned is in Texas. We have an episode that's coming out this week, which will be out, I'm sure, by the time this airs, in Georgia. Then we're going to other various swing states. And the idea behind this series is to try and sort of stay away from the presidential campaign trail. We're not following any of the presidential candidates, but we're trying to get out into communities, look at some of these down ballot races, speak to people that aren't often spoken to during a presidential election period, and really see if we can detect any sort of changes that are going on in the electorate. And so in Georgia, as I mentioned, we've been doing some stuff with a few down ballot candidates. We spoke to a woman called Ebony Carter, who is a 25-year-old first-time candidate who is running in Georgia's 110th state legislature district. And she was a really interesting, as I mentioned, first-time candidate who is out there. Her campaign manager is her mum. She goes out canvassing with her 1.5-year-old daughter and is running in a seat that Democrats haven't even contested in since 2012. And that to me was a real insight into, I think, the appetite that is existing all over this country for more and more people to get involved in democracy and to run for seats that maybe Democrats haven't considered running for before. We also spent some time with a congressional candidate called Angela Stanton King, who is running in John Lewis's old congressional seat. She's a Republican. She has almost no chance of winning, but we pressed her pretty hard on her views about QAnon. So she is one of those candidates in Georgia, and there are more than one, unfortunately. Who have put out on social media posts that seem to be suggesting that they are supportive of QAnon. And so we got into a bit of back and forth with her on that particular issue. She walked out of the interview. She didn't like being asked about a public record. So yeah, I mean, it's one of the really confronting things that I have seen throughout this journey and all the states we've been to is a very sort of pervasive level of disinformation that is going on all over the place. So we can talk about that in Florida as well. We did a film that was very focused on attitudes to the coronavirus pandemic and just kind of saw a lot of false conspiracy theories being spread around, you know, how lethal coronavirus could be, really questioning the official number of deaths that exist in the country now. And seeing how pervasive that is, particularly amongst conservative circles, has been really, really eye-opening for me.
Yeah, wow. You know, love your reporting. Don't envy you having to have direct exposure to those ideas. Even consuming them secondhand has been rough so far this year. But really appreciate the reporting you're doing. You know, in any year, the presidential race tends to take up all the oxygen in the room. That might even be more so this time. But there's so many interesting races going on in states across the country. Everybody should definitely check out on The Guardian this continuing work. And Oliver Lachlan, would love to have you back on, you know, as we get closer to the election to talk about some more of your reporting.
Love to. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.